Hey, thanks for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Our team at Lifeway Leadership would like to personally invite you to join us in Nashville this October for Pipeline 2018. This conference will be all about recruiting. Now, here's the thing. If you don't recruit leaders, you have no one to develop. So if you want to learn more about how to recruit leaders more effectively and create a culture of leadership development, then bring your team to Pipeline this fall. To register, just go to myleadershippipeline.com. Once again, that's myleadershippipeline.com. Now enjoy the podcast.
You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm flying solo again today. But I'm here with our guest, Johnny Baker, and just want to just welcome him to the podcast. A little bit about him. If you recognize his name, it's probably because you are a fan of or know about Celebrate Recovery. I know for thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of churches around the country and around the world really have really found that ministry to be a blessing to their church, not only to bring people in, but also to help people who are hurting that don't even know they're hurt, but come up and through and grow in their spiritual maturity toward Christ. There's a lot of things, hurdles, and you know, you hear about growth barriers all the time. And usually when we talk about growth barriers in the church leadership space, we're talking about the size of your church. And the reality is, if you want to grow your church, you've got to grow your people. And a big part of doing that is helping them realize the experiences that God's brought them through their life and where, and really, some of those when they get buried can also be a big barrier. So we want to kind of talk about that a little bit today, and also just talk about some general leadership principles with Johnny Baker. So Johnny is an author, of course, and he does CR, Celebrate Recovery, at Saddleback. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself? You have a spectacular beard
that I can see.
And lovely horn-rimmed glasses and lots of things going on there. So, but they can't see that. So I just wanted to share that with them so they could kind of get a picture.
Theater of the mind kind of stuff. I like it.
All right. Shoot.
Yeah. So, hey, Todd, thanks so much for having me on today. I really appreciate it. Like I said, my name is Johnny Baker. And the way I introduce myself at Celebrate Recovery is I say, my name is Johnny. I'm a believer. I struggle with alcoholism and codependency. If you just said, hi, Johnny, back while you're listening to this, I'm glad you're part of the family. But I've been in part of Celebrate Recovery since it started. My parents are the founders of the ministry. They began it at Saddleback Church in 1991. And I went through the program as a teenager for basically a child of an alcoholic issues. And then years later, kind of walked away from church and Celebrate Recovery and began following in my father's footsteps as far as alcoholism is concerned. In December of 1999, I was arrested for a DUI. And I had to call my dad, the founder and pastor of Celebrate Recovery, to get me out of jail. And then took me a little bit longer to kind of get the message and figure out that I really needed to attend Celebrate Recovery for myself to deal with my issues. But when my wife got pregnant with our first daughter, I began to seek out recovery because I didn't want my children to see me drink the way I'd watched my dad drink. And I went right to Celebrate Recovery. And that's over 15 years ago now, and have had an amazing experience of working my program and finding freedom over alcoholism, and then coming on staff and kind of working my way up and through. And now I'm the pastor of Celebrate Recovery here at Saddleback. And there's lots of stuff in there, but tried to do that as quickly as possible.
Well, I think that's an interesting, it's an interesting story, of course, because it's personal, and we all know the power of personal story. For whatever reason, when we share a personal story, it has more emphasis, it has more connectivity, it just hooks us a lot more. But that specific subject of alcoholism, I think, is really interesting in the church. And the reason is you have a lot of churches in the South, or a lot of traditional churches, who would say, ah, exactly, that's why we are teetotalers. Mm-hmm. We don't even touch the stuff. Meanwhile, half their congregation still does, and they're forced mm-hmm. to lie about it. And then the other half would say, oh, you know, it's okay, moderation and XYZ. How many pastors out there in your personal experience, people that you've interacted with, I mean, do you think alcoholism is a specific struggle with pastors or congregants or both? Like, how would you say that that falls?
Yeah, I think it's so touchy because, you know, not everybody who drinks is an alcoholic. And, you know, and so it's hard, you know, especially on my end of things to say that you shouldn't or you should. I think that there's signs of problem drinking. There's signs of alcoholism that I think people should pay attention to. One key one is if you feel like you have to hide it, that's a real sign that it's a problem for you. But there's lots of others as well. But I think, you know, I do believe it is a hard thing for pastors, but the research is showing us even more now that internet pornography is even a bigger struggle,
right,
for Christian men. There was a recent study that said 68% of Christian men admit to looking at online pornography on a regular basis. And there's a lot to unpack in that sentence, but I believe that that's a struggle as well. And I think it's important to know right from the beginning of this conversation that Celebrate Recovery, although it is for drug addicts and alcoholics, is not just for drug addicts
right.
and alcoholics. It's for anybody with what we say is a hurt, a hang up, or a habit.
So, okay, let's talk about pornography for a minute since mm-hmm. we opened up that subject. Is that something that, and unfortunately I haven't, I've heard some of that research, but I haven't seen the research in
sure.
how it breaks down from a age demographic standpoint. So I've had conversations with guys, you know, on a fairly regular basis. But one of the things that I've always said is I was truly blessed to grow up in a time and go through puberty and formative years when I didn't have access to, when there wasn't really an internet. I mean, I guess there technically
right.
was an internet, but
right.
I didn't have access to it. And I can't imagine what younger generations must deal with. Is it a generational thing, or does it cross multiple generations? It's whether or not you have barriers set up or what does the research show? Is it a generational thing, or is it for everybody?
Yeah, from what I'm seeing, it's not specifically generational, although younger and younger people are being exposed to pornography. So like you said, when I grew up, there wasn't online pornography. You couldn't access it as much as you can now. Now it's so much easier to access and free. And so a lot of those barriers of having to walk into a store to purchase it and spend money and all those things are gone now. So people are being exposed to it, not just men and women are being exposed to it at younger and younger ages. So I think that we'll start to see some of that trend line go down as it'll become younger and younger as people are experiencing it. But as far as I know, it's not just a specific generation. It's a pretty widespread epidemic as far as I'm concerned.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting too is you mentioned it's not just about drugs. It's not just about alcohol or even pornography. I mean, you have things like eating disorders and things that we used to associate with one gender are no
right.
longer associated with one gender.
No, it's, you know, I mean, so much of the things that happen now and it, you know, the argument is that because we can hear about them more or is it because it's, you know, easier? I don't know. But, you know, like you said, you know, with whether it's eating too much or not enough, we're finding that crosses gender lines. When we talk about abuse, that crosses gender lines. I think for so long we didn't talk about men who are abused, and that's becoming more and more of a topic. Women becoming addicted to pornography, that is used to be really rare, and that's becoming more and more of a topic. And so and obviously some of the things like people pleasing are gonna, it doesn't matter who, you know, what gender, race,
right.
culture you grew up in, that's a part of it. So much of what we're learning or what we've found over the years is that pain is universal. And so much of what happens with these things that we do we call acting out, it's to cover that pain. And so until we kind of dig in and deal with, well, what's the pain you experienced? When was it? Let's get you some help with that. And then those symptoms can go away. But if we just deal with the symptom, there's a thing called cross addiction where you'll stop doing one thing and you'll start doing something else. So you'll come to Celebrate Recovery because you drink too much and you'll gain 25 pounds because you started covering up those
right.
same issues with food. So
because you're still trying to find a way to release that.
Right. Right. Instead of working on the pain, you're still trying to cover it up.
One of the things that we've talked about on the podcast numerous times is things like counseling and the importance of counseling. And we've had several prominent leaders just spend and camp out some time on the importance of counseling and just saying, hey, I had to do it. This is something I did with, you know, my wife and our marriage or for whatever reason. And I just want to go ahead and, you know, we are going to answer the five questions, guys. But I did want to go ahead and bring out some of this just to say, hey, number one, a lot of us, you know, celebrate recovery. One of the key things is, hey, we're all recovering from something. Right. What's your hang up? What's your habit that you're dealing with? And if we're honest with ourselves, we probably are. And the best way to do that is not alone. And our tendency as Christians is to hide that. And the higher and higher we go in leadership, it is to hide that. So there is probably some secret sin that you're struggling with, whether you're a leader or not, you're listening to this. We would say, hey, you know, find a place within a group setting, most likely is going to be your best spot. You may want to start with a counselor. You may want to start with Celebrate Recovery Group, but find that and get started today. Don't put that off for longer and longer, because most of the time it's only going to lead to more and more issues and a deeper ditch that you find yourself in.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think counseling is so important, and you know, a group is so important. And you actually just covered the first two life lessons of the book, where, you know, admitting you have a problem, all, you know, doesn't make you weak, and covering up a problem always makes you worse, and it always makes things worse. I think that those are so hard to do, because like you said, the higher up in leadership you go, the more temptation is to say, I have to have it all together. My people have to think I have it all together. I can't let them know that I'm hurting. And, you know, if you're a pastor, your congregation may not be the safe place for you to go to share all of your pain, but you have to find some place to go, a counselor, a group. I believe in both of those things. My wife and I have gone to marriage counseling. I've gone to personal one-on-one counseling. And always have had great experiences as a result of that time. Even if it didn't happen in the office, just sparking conversation, allowing us to have some healing conversations that way. But also, I believe in the power of the group. The Bible tells us to confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. Well, my counselor, I don't know about you, but when I've gone to a counselor, he hasn't told me his stuff. He's helped me with mine, but there hasn't been a time where he says, oh, now here's my stuff and help me as well. That would be, I wouldn't really want that, because I'm paying him to be there. But in Celebrate Recovery, we do get a chance to do that, to build some relationships where we get to spend time with each other, praying for each other and talking to each other. And I believe that's the pathway to healing. So it's really important.
Well, I do think, I do think this is an important book, because it introduces Celebrate Recovery to a whole new generation. Or it may have been something that somebody heard about, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but, you know, kind of dismissed it at the time. And now in a different state that they find themselves in, they might be open to it. So the book that we've been talking about is The Road to Freedom, Healing from Your Hurts, Hangups, and Habits. And just in the same way, I mean, I'm not putting it on the pedestal that we often put experiencing God on, but you're finding a whole new generation of people that are coming into connection with that book and, you know, interacting with it, and something that they may have dismissed a long time ago, or even something that they went through 15 years ago. Now they're in a new space, and they find going through that again just hits them in a completely different way. Maybe they went through it before they had kids, or while they still had kids, and now they're empty nesters, or whatever place you find yourself in. Whether you're familiar with Celebrate Recovery or not, it's hard for me not to say CR. I'm so sorry.
I know.
whether you're familiar with Celebrate Recovery or not, I would say really consider taking a look at it for yourself and for your church. So with all that being said, I do want to get into our five questions. And so, Johnny, who are you currently learning from?
You know, the person I've learned the most from about leadership is my dad. So my dad is John Baker. Like I said earlier, he's the founder of Celebrate Recovery. He is somebody who I have, since I've been in ministry, have just been able to come alongside and learn from in so many different ways. And his ability to process information and make good choices, and his discernment level and those things is so strong. And I feel like every time I'm with him, I'm learning something else. And so my key mentor is my dad. And I really value that relationship so much.
Very cool. Very cool. Any other books or things that have come in recently that you are really learning from? Like, what are you reading?
Yeah, right now I'm kind of going through a phase of, you know, I haven't been reading a ton because I've been preparing for, you know, we've got a couple conferences that have taken up a lot of time. So I haven't been reading a ton. I have been reading this book called Bait of Satan by John Bevery, I guess is his name. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to pronounce it, but that's been an amazing book. It's just about not allowing conflict and offenses to really sit in. And so that's been amazing. And I actually learned a lot from some non-Christian leadership podcasts and things like that as well. Tim Ferriss and some of those guys that I love listening to them as well.
Yeah. I'm a podcast junkie now. The weird thing was when we first started the podcast, I really didn't listen to podcasts. If I could be completely honest.
Yeah.
But you know, probably a year or two in, I really got into podcasts. And so, you know, it's such a vital thing to understand, you know, different industries and what's going on, different stories. Because, you know, all wisdom is God's wisdom. And certainly if we're intentional about it, we can find things to apply. So I love that. I love that. And Tim Ferriss is great. Yeah. Any other podcasts you listen to?
Nothing I can think of off the top of my head that are related to this kind of stuff. I listen to some fun sports podcasts and things like that, and some just kind of cultural things. But you know, what I like about some of those leadership podcasts, and I know we'll talk about this in a minute, are sort of those daily routine ideas.
Yeah.
Cause I think there's so much power in that. So,
well, you're referring to the third question.
Yes,
which is coming up in a little bit. But the second question is always, what's your main point of emphasis? And I would ask you, I mean, I know you are director at Saddleback for Celebrate Recovery, but also from a national standpoint, what's the main point of emphasis that you guys have at the moment?
Yeah. So I think for both, for my local ministry and for our national ministry, really I'm focused right now on grace, showing grace. And so when people come to Celebrate Recovery, their lives typically are a mess. People don't usually show up to Celebrate Recovery on the very first night on a great day. You know, they usually come when things are kind of rough. And so, we have things called the 5 group guidelines that keep our group safe. And we have the DNA of an authentic Celebrate Recovery that keeps your group safe. And that's so key that our groups are safe places for people to come. Cause if they're not safe, they're not going to stay and they're not going to share and they're not going to grow. But there is a possibility of some legalism and some harshness to come in with those and some rule keeping instead of some grace in there. And so we've had the last couple of years trying to say, hey, listen, we need to keep those things in place. So you have to follow the structure. You have to do things the way that they're designed to be done. However, you also have to realize you're dealing with messy people. And often in ministry, no matter what ministry we're involved with, people are messy. And we try to sometimes
comes with the territory.
Sometimes we can try to make it too clean by having subsection 2 of rule 3 says this. So sorry, I can't make that announcement or I can't do this or whatever. And I think trying to say, no, we're going to have this happen on an individual basis. And sometimes we're going to make mistakes, but we're going to make mistakes in grace.
So when you look at grace, you know, what does practical grace look like in CR? If you're talking about, hey, we've had to adjust some things based on people's responses or based on, you know, some people wanting to respond from a legalism standpoint or a rule standpoint. What are some practical ways that you've shifted that?
Yeah, well, so I mentioned we have 5 group guidelines that keep our groups safe. And one of the group guidelines is about crosstalk, which is when 2 people talk at the same time, and that's not allowed during a group. So I'm allowed to share for 3 to 5 minutes without anybody commenting on what I shared. Well, we got to this place where crosstalk, all of these different things became a problem, you know, patting somebody on the shoulder or passing them a tissue or whatever that was. And it got to where people didn't know how to share. And so we came back in and said, no, hold on a second. That wasn't the heart of that guideline. And we were able to make some changes to that and address some of that really really well. And another one is relapse. Relapse is a potential part of recovery. It doesn't have to be. You can work a strong program and never relapse, but also lots of people are going to relapse in recovery. And what happens is people want a step-by-step way to deal with every relapse that they encounter. But the problem is each of those relapses is going to be really different.
Right.
You know, if somebody is at a wedding and they toast to something and they take a sip and they realize that it wasn't apple juice, but it actually was champagne, is that a relapse? Well, maybe it's going to, you know, the person's going to have to talk to their ministry leader or their pastor and talk about that. But that's really different than somebody who, you know, disappeared to Vegas for a weekend bender, lied about it. We had to find out about it. And, you know, they're not willing to admit the problem, all that stuff. That's all going to be, you're going to handle both of those really different. Well, people want I think this isn't just specific to this issue, but a lot of times in leadership, people want a one size fits all. This is how we handle this situation. Now, what I'm learning is that you can't always do that. Sometimes you have to talk to the person and it might not be fair. The decision that I make, you know, may not seem fair, that is, to somebody else who had to do a little bit harder of a thing to this person who seems too easy or whatever,
right.
But it's not about being fair. It's about getting it right and loving that person through that process in such a way that they want to come back and not feel like, well, I'm not going back there. They're, you know, they don't give any grace when I mess up.
Oh, I think that's so good. You know, I think, what people call leadership sometimes is like people talk about leadership and management and the differences all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think really what you've said is important, and we've drawn out a time or two before on the podcast, is that your process is for people. And somewhere along the way, sometimes people, you know, leaders end up thinking the people are for their process. and, you know, when you get down to rules or how we handle this situation or that situation, you lose the ability to lead people when you do that, when you treat them like well, you just pull out a rule book versus taking a look at their heart, not look at the rule book.
It takes more time. It's harder, but it's more rewarding at the end for both people involved, both for the leader and for the person. It's, you know, you feel closer to that person when you walk through it with them. And I think, you know, it's so tempting, even for me, there's times where I'm so tempted just to go, oh, there's a rule about this. There's got to be a way just to make this easier. But when you sit down with somebody over a cup of coffee or you look them in the eye and you have a conversation, you know, and plus I think there's a learning moment there too, where you can pull somebody else in and have them be a part of it. And then they know how to do that when it comes up for them again, you know, and again, right. I'm going to go back to like, who am I learning from? That's so much what my dad has done for me over the last 15 years I've been around, you know, on staff and all these different things, is that he very so often will pull me into a conversation that I don't really have a voice in, but I'm learning from how he's handling that situation so that then when it does come up again, I don't need to ask him how to do it. I can do it myself. And so I think it's important as leaders to always be looking for other people to do that with, because I think that takes some of the stress off of you as well. You're not the only one that is available to do it. And you're also teaching other people how to take care of those situations.
That's so good. All right. So when we say practical grace and we talk about practical ways of doing things, it isn't always, you know, people want to get out their pencil and paper and write down, okay, step 1, 2, 3. And in a lot of cases, it's really not. It really is caring a lot more about the particular person and the situation that they're going through than being able to apply a template to it. And templates, I know you had said, you know, you've listened to the podcast before and you may or may not know that I'm obsessed with templates and quadrants and way of moving things forward, but mostly that's for diagnosis. So it's to say, okay, where am I? Okay, now that I know, you know, now that we're able to say based on this person's performance and potential, we would put them in this category. Now, what do you do with them? And remembering that they're a person and how they need to be moved forward. So anyway.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I like rules. I think that they're important that we have them, but I think it's also important to know that you have some say in how those things get implemented, that you don't always just have to blindly follow things, that sometimes you may have to say, this is the rule, this is what we generally do, but in this case, we have to do this instead. Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Good, good. All right. Let's look at question three. So question three is, what do you have to do every day to make sure that you are ready to lead, apart from reading your Bible, I would
right.
say.
Yeah. So there's a couple things. And for me, unfortunately, I've not been able to do this for a while, and I can feel it is exercising. I think going to the gym, working out, whatever that looks like, has always been such an important part for me to spend 45 minutes or an hour doing something where my mind can kind of turn off and I'm not thinking about anything other than the task at hand, because I can be a forecaster and be worrying about things in the future a little bit too much,
right.
Or be, you know, always trying to think of the next thing or the next step. And so to have just a physical experience where I'm working out is really important for me. And then another one is spending time with my kids. I need to put my phone away and put the devices away, theirs as well, and spend time connecting with them, my kids and my wife, where we have conversations. And that's not so that they get time from me. It's so that I get time with them, because they fill my tank up, and it's my favorite thing in the world to do. But I can get really task oriented. I can get really driven on different things and forget to do that. And so I would say those are two things that I really need to do on a daily basis, and so, be intentional about, not just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm sure I'll spend time with my son today, but say, no, this is time I'm going to put the phone down, play catch with him, or right. hang out with my daughter, or whatever it is.
Are there set things in the schedule, or do you all throw your devices in a basket before you walk into the kitchen for dinner, or how does that work?
Yeah, usually it's dinner, and it's getting more and more complicated as my kids get older. My oldest daughter is going to start high school in the fall, and my middle child, she's going to be in junior high. And so they both have their own phones. And that's been something that my wife and I are still trying to kind of police.
Right.
And we're, you know, I'm probably the worst of all of us with being on it. And so, yeah, we're kind of, we put them on the counter before we eat dinner and, have a conversation, we try to have conversations at dinner time. And, but yeah, I think definitely there's a lot of learning that we have to do there. But I just know, like, when I sit down with my oldest daughter and we have a conversation, we both walk away from there filled up. And so it's just an important thing to do intentionally every day.
Well, I think that leads into our next question pretty well. And that is, what does leadership in your home look like? And how many kids do you have? And what does leadership in your home look like?
Yeah, I've got three kids, Maggie, Chloe, and Jimmy. And leadership in my home often looks like modeling. And so unfortunately, there's a number of—
You mean like blue steel?
Exactly. Yeah. I just try to rock that as much as possible. Yeah. No, but unfortunately, like, there's times when, and I think, I don't always think this is a bad thing, but I think it's a bad thing if it happens too often, where we kind of have to say, because I said so, when it comes to different things. You know, you have to fulfill this commitment because I told you to, not because, right. and hopefully they'll learn through fulfilling that commitment that there were good things out of that. But I'm not interested in arguing with you about why you have to fulfill this commitment. I'm telling you to do it.
Right.
But also then what that means is if I make a commitment, I have to follow through on that commitment. I can't quit things because they have to see that in my life. If I want them to do, if I want them to take care of their stuff, I have to take care of my stuff. And so much of it, what I try to do, what my wife and I try to do, is model it for them, because we know they're watching. We know they're watching how we relate to each other, and that, our relationship has a lot of impact on the relationships they're going to choose, later on in life, and for my, much, much, much later on in life. So it really looks like trying to model things. But again, every once in a while, you just have to pull out that parent card and say those things that you swore right. you would never say, and just say, because I'm your dad and you're going to do it because I told you to do it. And I think that's important, that there are times where it's not up for discussion. It's not up for debate. This is the way it's going to go.
Right. Okay. So I do have a follow-up personal question. So I was just thinking about stuff that, you were talking about things your parents say, and you're like, man, I never wanted to say this, but
yeah.
What's like one of the things that you have maybe said or done that your parents, did where you emulated your parents? Obviously, a lot of our children are a lot that I do is because I watch my dad do it. A lot of what my children will probably ultimately do is because they watch me do it or heard me say it. So what has been like one of the things that you're like, man, I need to do that differently. And then what's one of the things that you're like, oh man, you know, I recognize now that this was a very good thing that my parents did or said, that I'm emulating, that I'm modeling, that, you know, I'm super glad. I mean, it may not have been uncomfortable at the time, but I'm really glad now.
Yeah. I think what ends up happening is I'll say something and I'll go, oh, that was just John Baker Sr. Like, that was just, I mean, he might as well have been in the room, right. You know? And I think, you know, I kind of cringe and try to reword it. But I do think some of the stuff that, you know, because, you know, my dad was an alcoholic during my formative years, and he wasn't abusive. He wasn't angry. He wasn't any of those things. He just was emotionally unavailable. Right. And so, you know, he got sober when I was about 14 or 15 years old. And so I had two very different dads growing up. And so, I think, you know, one thing that he said that I hated, I mean, I hated it when he said it to me. I was a teenager at the time, and he had gotten sober, and I would want to go to a party, or I'd want to hang out with certain friends, and, you know, the whole thing. And he didn't think they were good for me. And he was right. And he would say, Johnny, if you hang out in a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. And I hated it so much. Like, I hate every time he said it, I would just go, yeah, Dad, I get it. But the idea being that if you hang around people long enough, you're going to do the thing that they're doing. You're going to be a part of it. And I always resented it because I thought, well, I'm a stronger person and I'll help them and they won't hurt me. And of course I always did the thing. Right. And I was kind of a willing participant anyway, but I at the time I hated it so much, and now I see so much wisdom in that. And so I try not to say that exact thing to my kids, but I do definitely try to tell them, hey, listen, the people you hang out with have an impact on you. And I don't know that there's anything you can say to a teenager that's more annoying than that, but it's so true. And I think as an adult, you see it so much. Even now, if I hang out with you know, a certain group of people, I become more like them. It's how it goes. That can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. And so I think that is one that I hated when he said it,
right.
But now I see so much wisdom in it. And I don't know about you, but I realized that when I was a teenager, my dad was the dumbest man I ever knew. And now as an adult, he's the wisest man I ever knew. And now I just go, oh my gosh, he's just so wise. And the same with my mom. I just remember rolling my eyes behind their backs more often than not. and now just going, oh my gosh, they've got so much wisdom. So I think it's definitely those things that come out where I just go, all right, I want to explain that differently, or I don't want to just set a rule, or I want to hold them to this a little bit more. But yeah, definitely there's those times where it just comes out and you just go, oh man, I'll often like call my mom and I'll say, so you just showed up at our house in the form of something I said, you know, or whatever. So
I can remember my dad. So I was a preacher's kid as well. And so I can remember him always saying, remember who you are and whose you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was remember who you are and remember what your last name is. Cause we had a very, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, and everybody knew our family. Everybody knew our family was a good family and had a bunch of preachers in it and, you know, all that. And so it was like, don't screw up. If I would go to work on another farmer's, you know, tobacco or pick peppers or work with whatever, it was always remember who you are and whose you are. And it was not only about last name. He was also talking about remember who you are in Christ. Remember whose you are, that you're God's, but your last name is also Adkins. So you better not screw up. But I hated that. But now I really, you know, I'm super proud of it, and I'm glad that I did that and took that on. And part of it is that's just the weird nature of growing up in a central eastern Kentucky kind of place.
It's so funny. My son and I had to bring him to the office last night to get some work done, and my wife was gone with my daughter. So I said, hey, come with me. And we walked in, and there's a soda machine. I said, oh, you can get yourself something to drink. He goes, I love being a pastor's kid. I'm like, wow. All right. Well, hey, that's If a free soda is going to do it today, I'll take it.
Well, I wouldn't trade it for anything because of the experiences that you had early on. I mean, my dad was a small time pastor. And so like he did visitations on Tuesdays when I was smaller. Mm-hmm. And I can remember going to countless people's houses and being, you know, forced into, you know, conversations I felt like, and I was super awkward or super whatever. And now I'm like, wow, what an amazing experience I had.
Right.
You know, with all kinds of different issues and just being privy to all that stuff. And I tell people all the time, I learned more about leadership in a small, you know, bivocational setting in the middle of nowhere than I did at a megachurch. It goes back to what you were talking about earlier, you know, with people and leading people. At the end of the day, we can have extremely savvy systems, but unless we have savvy people in place, unless we have, you know, leaders in place that can lead and guide those conversations, you know, we're not getting anywhere. Pastors can only do so much. And it's if we want to grow our church, we have to grow our people. Yeah. And so I think it's vitally important to understand those things. Man, I am learning a lot or uncovering a lot in my own self as we talk. So, okay, let me ask the last question. What would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
Oh, man, this is the question that I've been thinking about a lot because kind of like we were just talking about, I don't know that my 20-year-old self would listen to anything that I would say anyway. Right. But
you'd be John Baker Sr. right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think so much of what I love what you just said about learning how to be a leader in the role, you know, the bivocational pastor role, because I think it's so important. I think one thing I would say is everything that happens to you now is going to determine how you lead later, both good and bad. I had a mentor in high school who used to say to me that you have an impact on everybody you come across today. It's going to be a positive one or a negative one. You choose. And kind of that kind of idea that, you know, part of my story is that I grew up in the church, but I always had this sort of innate need to rebel. I kind of was always like, I got to be the bad boy. I got to do this thing. I got, you know, and I think if I could sit myself down as a 20-year-old and say, that's really stupid and it's not going to get you anywhere. Right. And it's going to end up causing you and other people a lot of pain. You know, I think that's one thing I would tell myself. I think another thing I would tell myself is figure out who you are and just be that person. It's so tempting, to chameleon yourself and become, at least for me, to become different around different people I would hang around. And so just this, and then also to kind of feel a certain way and not want to be the weirdo or not be the guy who, you know, whatever, you know, dressed a certain way or acted a certain way, and just say like, listen, be who God made you to be and just own that, but be that person. And it's taken me until I'm 42 now to kind of learn some of those things of like, hey, you know, not everybody has to love me all the time. That's okay. That's a hard leadership lesson to learn because as leaders, we want to have people do the things that we're asking them to do and to follow us and all that stuff. And that can often feel like love. But not everybody has to love me, and it's okay if they don't want to be led by me. They can choose to go somewhere else. If I feel called here, I'm going to stay here and be, you know, be sure of myself. And so, I think a lot of it would be that kind of stuff. And I think too, just to say like, you know, listen, it doesn't all have to happen today. It can take time. That's okay too. And I think the last thing I would tell myself, and this is something I tell my kids all the time, is stop trying to be cool. being cool is such a waste of time. Go to the pep rally and cheer and enjoy it. You don't have to be the guy who thinks, you know, you're too cool for that. You know, just stop it. Just enjoy being around people and stop trying to be the, you know, be a certain image. Just enjoy life because this is the one we get, and it's, you know, and I would rather go through my days enjoying it than trying to put off an air of being too cool for things. So that's what I tell my kids. That's probably something that they roll their eyes at all the time, by the way, is I say, ah, stop trying to be cool. Just go have fun. You know? So lots of those kinds of things.
Good, good. Well, man, I really appreciate our conversation today. What's one or two takeaways that you would say from if somebody's new to Celebrate Recovery, if they don't know about that ministry, what are one or two things that you would say are essential to know? And then, you know, as well, like how does the new book put a new perspective on that?
Yeah, sure. You know, if you haven't heard about Celebrate Recovery, the quickest way to refer to it is it's a Christ-centered 12-step program. It's basically a way for anybody with any struggle to learn how to get rid of those things. And so it's group-based. And the one thing I would tell you is every person, when you show up to a Celebrate Recovery, every person there is going through Celebrate Recovery, including the leaders. And in my case, as the pastor of the ministry here at Saddleback, myself. And so we're in it with you. We're not people who are there just to try to help people who need it, and that we don't, but we all admit we have different issues and we're there for different reasons, but we're all working the same program. And I'd invite you to come. And the best way to find out about Celebrate Recovery is to go to the website. CelebrateRecovery.com and click on find a group, and you can search your zip code and find a group around you by, you know, radius. And if you can't find one, there's another tab called find your state rep. And these are about 300 volunteers all across the country that are there to help you start and grow a Celebrate Recovery, but they'd also love to help you find one that maybe isn't listed on the website yet. You know, I think a lot of people don't know Celebrate Recovery is for them because they think it's just for drug addicts and alcoholics. And one thing about the road to freedom, and one thing that I hope conversations like this do, is to lower that barrier and just say, no, it's for anybody. The Bible says we've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God, which means we've all hurt people and people have hurt us, which means we all qualify for Celebrate Recovery because it talks about we help with hurts as well. And the book is really just 10 life lessons I've learned in the course of my time in Celebrate Recovery from the very beginning of the ministry till now that I believe don't apply just to people who are in Celebrate Recovery, but to all of us. And there are things that I hope that if you begin to apply them to your life, you'll find freedom like I have found.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's it for today. Thank you guys so much for listening to Five Leadership Questions podcast. If you would, please go over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to sign you and your team up for Pipeline 2018 at myleadershippipeline.com and join us in Nashville this October.